This is the Misdirected Mark Podcast, a podcast about gaming, game mastering, and entertaining you, our listeners. We are explicit, and you have been warned, and I'd like to thank Mike Willard for letting us use his music on our show. Now let's pick up those mics and get on with this thing.
Why, yes. Let us pick up those mics and get on with this thing. And Aloy, you did not hear the intro music because you're on the iPad, but there was intro music. And on this episode, it's Kids Week. I'm Misdirected Mark, and we are here with Aloy LaSanta to talk about designing games for kids. My name is Chris.
I'm Phil.
And I'm Aloy.
What's going on, Aloy? How's things?
I'm good. I was wondering. I was just like, it got quiet there for a minute. I was like, what's going on?
That's the thing about the person who we bring in. There's no, they don't hear the soundboard yet.
Right. We don't have a way to feed you back the soundboard.
We haven't figured that out yet. So,
I mean, it all works. I assumed something was happening.
Yep.
I'm going to just quickly address the chat room as well as our normal listeners who are listening, who did not hear Bob introduce himself. Bob is not feeling well.
Bob is very sick.
He's very sick. I believe his message to us this morning was, can't make it to show, sick AF.
Yeah. He even took a picture of himself in bed and we were like, oh my God, don't be dead.
Yeah. Don't be dead, Bob. Like, yeah. So, which makes me nervous because when we talk about what's going on in a second, I was in close proximity to Bob for a portion of the weekend and now I'm nervous for my own health. So we'll find out shortly.
Well, to go along with that, Phil, what is going on?
So I was in close proximity to Bob because, I had a crazy week at work. It was super stressful, but it was super successful. Like I'm keeping these two projects that I have on track. And they were the first week of the project. It was super stressful to make sure everything went smoothly. And, I was pretty wrecked by the end of the week. Like when I was leaving, my bosses were like, that was a really successful week. You did a really nice job. I'm like, I don't want to talk to anybody. Like, I just want to go home and lay down. Like, I want to watch Steven Universe and pass out for like an evening. Anyway. So we did some of that. I did more work on Hydro Hackers. Sprint 4 of Hydro Hackers is done. And I immediately jumped into Sprint 5, which is to start the only chapter that I think I'm missing from the book, which is gear. So I started putting the gear chapter together. And then Bob and I went and saw Valerian on the weekend, which I liked. I liked Valerian quite a lot. And I've come to learn that Marvel movies have ruined me for going to the movie theater. Like, Valerian ranks as like a solid mid-range Marvel movie. Like, that's my problem right now. Like, there's nothing wrong with Valerian. Visually beautiful. Story was good enough. Like, not spectacular, but also like no cheesy plot holes where I was like, this is stupid. I can't believe I'm watching this. Solid, solid movie. The problem is that like I can name like six Marvel movies where I was like completely blown away. Like, it's ruining me.
That just means everybody needs to do better, right?
Well, it's hard to achieve. It's even hard for Marvel to achieve that limit because, I mean, I loved Spider-Man Homecoming, but I didn't love it more than both Guardians and the Avengers.
I actually really loved Spider-Man Homecoming.
I mean, don't get me wrong, and we could talk about it in the after show, but I loved Spider-Man Homecoming. It's a solid Marvel movie. And that's the problem, is like solid Marvel movie compared to other movies means it's great.
It's funny because I thought Homecoming was better than a lot of other Marvel movies. Like, I thought it was better than this.
That's okay. I mean,
I thought it was better than the second Guardians of the Galaxy flick.
Oh, I don't know. After I saw the second Guardians, after I watched Guardians 2 the second time, I fell in love with that movie like way more than the first time I saw it. Anyway.
Hey, Guardians 2 was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I really dug on Guardians 2. So anyway, I did that. We played Blades. We had Blades in the Dark. Also, where we were both in close proximity to Bob again.
that's true.
It makes me nervous. But anyway, we played Blades. We actually wound up having an interesting talk about the purpose of character development and story in Blades. Like, is it a needed function? Should it be in there? And is it potentially damaging to the game, to the characters of the game, to have personal stories? And I don't want to over elaborate on that because
we're going to talk about it in the future.
Cause I feel like we could talk a little bit about it in the after show, but ultimately what we came up with was that it was okay to have some personal story. We just have to, treat it a little more carefully.
Absolutely.
So that was me. Aloy, what's going on with you?
Oh man. Well, my days are usually filled with a baby for the most part. I did just have my 38th birthday yesterday.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Fun. Congratulations.
Yeah, yeah. I'm almost to the big 4-0. But I think the majority of my time has been spent doing some conversions. I'm doing API Canada over to Savage Worlds and the DGS 2.0. I'm also working on doing both. I finished up the Mermaid Adventures conversion to the PIP system core, and I also did. I'm working now on the Infestation conversion, as well as working on A Kid's Guide to Monster Hunting, which will be brand new, not converted from something else previous. So I'm working on a lot of different things. Today I actually spent about 2 hours working on some outlines and whatnot for a possible second edition of Part-Time Gods.
Yeah.
So it's interesting the ideas that I have going right now on that. So I did do some work on it today. I'm not promising any dates or anything, but it is looking pretty.
Yeah, that's a thing we'll talk about more in the future.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I guess if we're going to do movies, I recently saw Wonder Woman. I'm like way after everyone else, but I recently saw it and I thought it was pretty good. And I also got to see Boss Baby, which I remember seeing the previews and I was like, this thing looks so dumb. But then I watched the movie and it was actually pretty decent.
My daughter has wanted to see that movie and I keep, we almost keep getting it on demand. So I guess it's doable. I should go ahead and listen to it.
I think you should, because it was one of those, like, I saw the trailer and it was just like, it's the endless war of babies versus puppies. And I'm like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. But really, like, all of that, like, backstory and everything, it's such a small section of the movie. And the movie really focuses a lot on the brothers and their imaginations and stuff like that. I really, really liked the animation and I liked the character development, and I just actually thought it was just really solid. I liked it way more than I thought I was going to, and that might be because I went into it thinking it was going to be, you know, a pile of poop.
I think I'm going to use that as a distraction, because my kids have also been trying to convince me that the Emoji Movie might be a good idea, and I'm like, no.
Oh, gosh.
I'm like, no.
I am curious.
I saw one commercial that did make me laugh from the Emoji Movie, and it was where they bumped into a colon with a capital P and a colon with an ending parentheses. They bumped into him and they were like, oh, I hate to bump into the elderly.
Yeah.
That part kind of did make me laugh. Every other commercial has been pretty hideous, but yeah. that part did make me laugh.
I am curious to the Emoji Movie, because how the heck do you make a story out of emojis?
I don't know. I will say this. There is one more kids movie coming down the pike that I'm ready to jump on board with, which is in September. Lego Ninjago.
Yeah, that looks interesting.
Yeah. I was like, okay. I'm like, Dante, I'll go see that.
I still haven't seen Lego Batman, so.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one either.
Lego Batman was pretty good.
I mean, I liked the Lego movie, so.
Yeah, I love the Lego movie.
Yeah, so the Bat, I'd be more than happy to hit the Batman movie.
Is the Batman Lego movie better or worse than the Lego movie?
I would say that it's not as good as the Lego movie, but if you're really into, you know, Batman, then you might like it more. But, you know, I'm pretty much like, I like Batman, but I'm not like, ooh, Batman. So I thought it was good. Will Arnett does the voice, and he does a bang up job making Batman pretty much as funny as possible.
It does. The previews do look good for it. Like I saw the previews and I was like, oh yeah, I would go see that. And I think I just didn't, because I think the kids saw it when they were on vacation or something. And they wound up going without me with their cousins or something. I was like, all right. So, I mean, I had to wait. Like I had to come back. They did the same thing at spring break and they went and saw Moana without me. And then, luckily they came back with the DVD. So
yes. Oh man. Moana's so good.
Yeah, it really is.
I plan on actually reviewing Moana. I think I'm reviewing Moana next week for my review YouTube channel that I have.
Oh, nice. I'm trying to convince my daughter that that she could go as Moana, and then I will go as Maui.
Like, oh, you'd make a great Maui.
Right? Like, I just need like a muscle shirt kind of thing, but I would go as Maui. But she wants to go as Pua, the pig. And I'm like, really? Because that's barely a character in the movie. Like,
I was going to say, Pua's like in there like...
That's what
it's like a little bit in the beginning and then a little bit at the end and like right, it's nothing in between. At least I was going to say at least try to be the chicken.
Right, well, yeah, she wants her brother to be the chicken. Hey, oh, hey. Gosh. She wants Dante to be Hey, Hey.
Hey, Hey, that's the name.
Yeah.
I mean, Dante's scrawny enough.
Yeah, well, you think he's scrawny, man, but you really, like, you got to put your hands on him, man. Like, that, he's, like, he's getting, like, that Bruce Lee, like, super thin ripped kind of thing.
Ah, he's wiry.
Yeah, he's wiry, man. He's,
Or lithe, as they say.
Yeah, his, what you call it? He was playing, he went to summer camp, and they were playing kickball. Mm-hmm. And, like, all four times he was up, he hit a home run. Like, because that kid just kicks all day, right? Because yeah. He's in Taekwondo. So he, like, just booted the thing out of the park, like, four times.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. Anyway. What about you, man? What's going on with Chris?
What's going on with me? I don't know. I mean, usually...
Aloy and I not give you enough time to start thinking of a few things?
Well, at this point in time, when I look down at the clock, right? Like...
Now you want to just kind of bail and keep going?
No. I mean, I won't bail and keep going. I played Over the Edge with Rob Abrazzato, Nikki, and Mike Dinos.
Yeah.
We had a good time. The game is interesting.
Yeah? You like it?
Yeah, I like it so far. Yeah, it's cool. It's been pretty great. I can never say Al Mirage is a weird, strange, wacky place.
Oh, it is. So, I mean, I remember that game from the 90s and just being like, this thing is like out there. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. It's paranoia sort of esque with it's, except it's using conspiracies instead.
And when you say paranoia-esque, I have some serious like feels about what that means. Are you talking about paranoia-esque as in there's an overarching controlling structure? Or are you talking about like there's arbitrarily people getting killed in the game and that the game master can just basically trample over everyone in the game? Because that's how – I mean I grew up on every edition of Paranoia up till the last one. And that's – when you say paranoia, I have some pretty specific feels about what that is.
So paranoia feel-wise has that sort of satirical Logan's Run-esque thing going on with it?
Yes, absolutely.
Al Mirage has that sort of satirical near-future conspiracy thing going on, like Fantasy Island.
Okay. All right. Well, that I get. Okay.
Yeah.
Not like where, you know, Game Master's just arbitrarily wasting players for giggles.
Correct.
I've done that.
Instead of arbitrarily wasting players, it's arbitrarily introducing more weird science fantasy type
garbage. That's cool. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's got that all over the place. I mean, there was techno babble everywhere about harmonics and resonance and zeta waves. And
yeah, there you go. Yeah, yeah. Just big. Yeah. I like that.
It went that way. That's cool. That's how we played. So that was really cool. I'm playing some more of that on Fridays for a while, that group. So that's pretty awesome. That's it. Just been working along on stuff, drawing more maps for the Airy Peaks that is starting to come more into focus now, trying to tidy up the words and whatnot on that, writing contracts.
It's fun, right?
Yeah, actually it is. Strangely enough, I actually like it.
It's like writing rules.
It is like writing rules a lot of times. Learning about publishing, learning about printing.
Yes.
And and copy shops and things like that.
Here's a little tidbit. Our encoded contract, the ones that you've been working on, share some DNA to Third Eye Games contracts.
I'm sure they do.
Because when I started encoded, I asked Aloy if I could borrow his contract structure. So I cribbed together his, Monty Cook's, trying to think who else's, one or two other ones. Like, that's where our contract template got born from.
Well, and of course mine came from White Wolf and a couple of other places that I had worked with previously that I had cribbed together. So yours is actually an amalgamation of about a dozen different companies.
Oh, you know what?
It's a lineage of contracts.
Do you know what needs to happen? Who's the person who wrote Designers and Dragons?
Shannon Appleklein.
Shannon Appleklein needs to do a project where publishers hand over their contracts and then Shannon lines them up and shows the taxonomy of how they all came together. Because if you remember, and then I promise we can actually get the show going. When I put the, when I put our contract together from Monty Cook's contract, when Merwin saw it, he's like, some of this language is from WotC. Right. Because Monty Cook obviously did what we did and like, you know, lifted parts of their contract from his WotC contract. Mm-hmm. So I'm telling you, like, Shannon Appleklein could do a project of like, here is, you know, here's Third Eye Games contract. And like it ties like in, like almost like that, you know, chromosomal analysis thing. Like it's 68% white wolf. And, you know,
I feel like about 0.2% of the gaming population would be interested in that.
I find it fascinating, but I was also a biologist. There's a part of me that the idea of the taxonomy and the genetic relation between all of those documents somehow amuses me. So
if there was like a graphic of it that we could just look at and be like, that's funny. And then
ultimately that's what you do, is you make like a big info
family
chart.
Tree.
Yeah. That basically says like
contracts.
Yeah. That basically says like all contracts derive their ancestor from like some contract that got written for Traveler in 1976. Like all of us are like, like all of us tie somehow to that thing.
That is the Adam and Eve of contracts.
That's what I'm saying. Like, don't tell me that wouldn't be somewhat interesting. At least for us.
It would be interesting.
I think that's all you, Phil. I think that's all you.
I agree. I think that's all you, buddy.
I'm going to drink a coffee. You guys talk about announcements.
I'm just going to go to the next thing. Yeah, that's a good idea. So, announcements this week. We just have one, because it's going to take a little while to get through. And that's the PIP System Core Book is on sale on drive-through in PDF. And that is, Aloy, your game.
That is my game. That's my brand new, like brand new. I think I released it. It's been out for a week now. So, last Monday, I released the PDF for it. So yes, brand new.
I got my copy. It was funny because I got my copy from the Kickstarter, and then I got my copy for being a drive-through reviewer. So I got like two copies of it. So would you please tell people at home, what is the PIP System Core Book?
So the PIP System Core Book, the system actually evolved from some other games that I had created, Mermaid Adventures, Infestation, and a game called Camp Myth, the RPG. And, When I was working on this system that I kind of called the PIP system, it was kind of evolving as I made each game and I added different layers and different stuff to it. And when I started working on the next game in the PIP system series, I was like, you know what? There's like a lot of different versions here. I feel like I could culminate everything into a single core book. And a core book is something that I've wanted to do for a long time, but I didn't really have a system that I felt that I could do a core book and have it do justice. Like a lot of my other systems are very like almost everything to them is customized. Whereas the PIP system, some of the pieces were very modular. So it made it easier to make it into a core book than some of my other systems. So I decided to start working on that. I actually got a really good team of designers and writers with me, and you know, I told them my visions that I had for it, and you know, gave them, you know, most of the mechanics and how everything was going to work, and then you know, the team got together and we wrote it all together. It's been play tested to all hell, and it's really, really good. it's basically been play tested for I don't know, when did Mermaid Adventures come out? That was five, 6 years ago.
Yeah, for half a decade.
Yeah, so it's been play tested, but the PIP System Core Book, I think it's just one of those things that eventually it was something that I was going to end up doing. It's a full color book, which is something I haven't done before. It's, you know, it's about 150 pages, and it's got everything that you need in order to make some characters and, you know, have a fun time regardless of whatever genre or whatever that you want to play in. And I think that that's the best thing that I've been able to put out recently. I really, really love the PIP system. And obviously, we just released the PDF for Mermaid Adventures Revised. So now we have the new Mermaid Adventures that is compatible with the new PIP system core book. We're working on the conversion of Infestation and an RPG of Bugs and Heroes. Mm-hmm. So that will be compatible with the new PIP system core book. And then I'm working on the next game after that, which is called A Kid's Guide to Monster Hunting, which should be a lot of fun as well. And that'll be the first brand new game that'll be coming out for the PIP system core book.
Would you mind letting folks know how the core mechanisms of the game work?
Sure. The best part about the PIP system is that it's actually super easy to pick up. The whole game uses just D6s. And what you have is you'll have two different pools of D6s, two different colors is how we usually refer to it in the book. We refer to it as white dice and black dice. But it can be any two colors. It can be red and green or, you know, left hand, right hand, whatever you want to do. But basically, your white dice are your positive dice. That's your skills. Any weapons you have, any qualities that you have, and you'll get that many D6s in your hand. So if we just take, for instance, that you're trying to attack somebody, we'll just, that's like the standard in RPGs.
Sure.
Here.
Let's say that I am a bug in Bugs and Heroes, and there is a something that is trying to attack one of my friends, and I want to defend them by slaughtering them with my, my mandibles.
Okay. So if you're slaughtering with mandibles, we'll say that you're an ant, because I like ants. Sure. I like ants in Infestation quite a bit. So if you're an ant, let's just say that you have a strike of two dice. So you grab two white dice, mm-hmm. but also ants get the strong lifter ability. So if you're trying to move the person out of the way too, kind of like bum rush them, you can get an additional two dice as well. What if you sharpened your mandibles? You might get an additional die for that. So let's say that you have five dice that you're using to attack. Let's say a bird's trying to eat your stink bug friend. So we would look then at the bird stats, and the bird, I believe, is a challenge rating 3, which would mean you would pick up 3 black dice. Now, the black dice in this equation in your dice pools, those are the dice that are your challenge, the thing you're trying to hit, how difficult it is, you know, stuff like that. So if it's a challenge rating 3, then you would get 3 black dice in your hand. So now you have 5 white dice and 3 black dice, and you would roll them all together. And a success on a die is 4, 5, or 6. And you're looking for more successes on your white dice than you have on your black dice. And that's basically how it works. And basically every success you would get on the white dice would mean that you would deal a hit to the thing that you're trying to hit.
Okay. And then what if you have more black dice than white dice? You fail and something bad happens?
Well, it basically means that you fail. Yes, definitely. If you fail a lot, like let's say if you roll 3 or more successes on the black dice over your white dice, then you end up with what's called an epic failure, and then you would end up taking damage from your failed attack.
Oh, that's good. Or yeah. Bad, I should say. And it sounds like all the challenges are rated in levels, like the bird is a challenge rating 3, so that just tells you how many – and then probably any adverse things that occur during the situation or things that would cause complications add more black dice to the pool.
Exactly. So there's complications. If that bird had armor of some sort, it would add black dice. If they have special abilities that add black dice, or if they're behind cover, or you know, stuff like that, all that stuff can add to the challenge, and so adding more black dice to your pool. And you know, sometimes you might only have a couple of dice, and then like the black dice keep piling on. But even then, there's still a chance that you can still make it, because that's kind of the beauty of the system. Is I've seen rolls where somebody had like 8 white dice against, you know, 2 black dice and still failed. You know, so the chance has a lot to do with it.
Yeah,
but we do have a thing called fortune as well in it. It's a spendable, you know, thing that you can have. Resource, that's the word. It's a spendable resource that all the players have, and they can spend it to add additional dice and stuff like that to kind of make sure that they do succeed at some important roles.
There we go. So then you have some level of control over what's going to happen as a player, which is always good, so you're not just completely and wholly relying on chance.
Exactly.
So That's the game. That's the core mechanic. It's like
that's
you said,
the core. I mean, yeah. There's a lot more to it, obviously. Yeah. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any need for a core book.
Yeah. There's all
there's a lot of like. Go ahead.
So say there's all the all the different ways to reskin the different abilities and skills and things like that, right? And probably little subsystems and whatnot in there that you can attach or take off.
Exactly. And I mean, and there's lots of different what we call qualities. So there's like skill qualities that are like specialties, and there's advanced qualities like are you really athletic, or can you do trick shots, or are you wealthy? Then there's magic involved, and there's, you know, spells. So there's a lot of different things to explain. And the cool thing about it is that now, you know, you're not jumping from magic works differently in Mermaid Adventures than it does in Bugs, than it does in, you know, Kids Guide. It all kind of now works off the same system. So the idea that I've always had is that eventually, as we get more settings out, and you'll be able to basically cross over game lines. So what if what if you're playing a Kid's Guide to Monster Hunting, and somebody says, well, I think I want to play a mermaid in the game. you can, you know, if your kids get shrunk down, or if your mermaids get shrunk down to the size of bugs, you know, now you can play with the bugs too. So there's a lot of different ways to kind of cross over now that all of the rules are essentially the same.
Yeah. I mean, that makes it, I mean, it's got that, it's a better version of what they were doing with World of Darkness, but it actually will work. For those,
I don't want to say anything bad about World of Darkness, because I actually love World of Darkness, but you know, they did have, yes, that didn't always work when you would cross over.
Yeah, that's true. Like werewolves might be a little bit stronger than vampires every day of the week. Anyways, so that's the so this game, it's supposed to be targeted at kids, but I know that adults can also have a good time with this game, because there's all that stuff that you can mess around with, all the little things that you can fiddle with that that certain kinds of gamers like to fiddle with, right?
Well, I think that's the thing that I kind of wanted to change with this new core book, is that it's definitely the type of game that is awesome for introducing kids to role playing, and for introducing any new players, anybody who's new to role playing. This is the perfect system for you to introduce them to that. However, I wouldn't say that it's marketed directly to kids anymore. Oh. It used to be, you know, very much like that. Now it's more directed towards the general gamer who is looking for a rules light rule set that is modular and flexible and customizable. That they can enjoy with their families, or with, you know, groups of adults and, you know, old dudes. You know, you can enjoy it with anybody. That's kind of the cool thing about kind of the revamp of the system. It's definitely it's notched up a level in complexity from like the original Mermaid Adventure. So it's definitely not as simplistic. So it's not really geared towards just the little kids anymore. The good thing about the core book, however, is that those rules that we did have for the little kids, I included in the back. So it's very easy to take all of the rules that we have here and simplify them even further for smaller kids. So that was actually, and that was a big deal. I actually have that section, as well as a section with tips and stuff on how to play with kids, which is, again, a big deal when it comes to my games. You know, I want my games, specifically the Pip system, and any games that will come out for the Pip system to be played with a family, you know, with friends. And I love the idea of having a system that anybody can walk into it and immediately pick it up and know exactly how to use it and how to play it.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good design goal, right? Like it's a game that is geared towards playing with families, and to also, like, you can keep it simple if you want, but then you can bring kids along and introduce more complex concepts and parts of the game as they get older, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Very nice. So last thing before we move on, and people can pick this up at the PDF up at DriveThru. When can people pick up the print book, or where can they pre-order it?
I actually just got the print today. So there were a couple of technical little things with the cover that I needed to re-put them in. So you know how that works. Mm-hmm. So I should actually have probably print copies available within the next, I would say within the next week, it'll pop up on my website at thirdeyegames.net. But I would say probably about two weeks, it should pop up on DriveThru. The process is slightly longer on DriveThru than it is when I do it directly with the printer.
We're familiar.
Yeah.
We know how that goes.
got some experience in that.
Yeah.
So I do hope to have these up soon. I'm not doing any pre-orders. I'm just going to announce it and be crazy about it and be excited about it when it actually is available for print, which again should be, probably by the end of this week on my website, but I would say maybe about 2 weeks for a DriveThru.
Most excellent.
Very cool. We will let people know about that on the show too when that pops up there too.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, it's just one of those things, like, you know, it's so hard to get somebody super excited about rules. You know, it's one of those things, like, you know, you guys know my games, you know, I make my rules fit usually a genre or a setting, and I make it so that the rules reflect the kind of play style that I'm looking to give you in that particular setting. So when I'm selling a game like Part-Time Gods or Amp, like, I'm telling you about the setting, like, this is a supers game and it's like this and it's about people with powers, not necessarily superheroes. And people jive on the idea and then they pick up the game and they're like, ooh, this game is really awesome too because it fits with the theme. It's a core book was actually really difficult. It was my first time ever trying to approach something that was going to be, I guess, universal is not necessarily the right word because I don't think it does everything. But it definitely is a, you know, non-genre specific game system. And it's, I mean, I'm super excited about it, but I am obviously biased.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So, as you should be, right? But, it's your game. You know, you should love the game that you made.
Exactly. But, you know, but it's, I'm glad that I've been given like, you know, this platform through you guys, cause you guys are awesome. So I appreciate it.
Thanks.
To really kind of convey how excited I am about this release and hopefully people, you know, get enthused by my, you know, by my enthusiasm and, you know, check it out. The cool thing is if you, you know, if nothing I've said so far has convinced you, there is actually a quick start on DriveThru or on my website as well. So you can go grab the quick start. It's got the basics of the game, basically everything I've said here. It's got that in it, as well as a starting adventure and some pre-gens. So grab it and try it out at your table. See if you like it. And if you do, the PDF's $15. So it's pretty easy to go ahead and grab. And, then you can start creating your own stuff, which I think is pretty cool.
Real quick, I had there's a couple of people in the chat room that were asking about when will the backers get print copies or be able to get their drive-through code to get print copies.
That is actually going to be available through drive-through, so the backers will get their coupons for their print copies. And the moment that it's available is when it will happen, probably about 2 weeks. So it is, you know, that's it's going to be about a 2 week process for me to get it all done through drive-through. But I did it through my own printer first so I could make sure I got a handful of them at Gen Con because I have to do that first and get all that situated so that I have some at Gen Con. But the drive-through ones will definitely be out before Gen Con.
Mm-hmm. Super important to have copies at Gen Con, especially because those booths cost so much money. So it's good to, you know, get some sales
exactly.
there. All right. Well, let's move on. Thank you for that information on the Pip System core book. We're going to
definitely. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Okay. We're going to talk about Bag-Thulu. And instead of doing the ad copy that we normally do,
Bag-Thulu
from Wayward Masquerade, we're going to have a haiku contest going forward. In fact, this contest will go all the way until the end of August.
Okay.
So for those who don't know, haikus, they are short little poems. They go, 5, 7, 5 moras, which are essentially syllables. So 5 syllables, 7 syllables, 5 syllable lines. And we're going to judge them on humor, nihilism, making a Bag-Thulu reference, cosmic horror, and mythos references. You can submit your haiku entries to chris@misdirectedmark.com with the subject Cthulhu Haiku. And yes, you can submit more than one. The winner of the contest will be mailed a mini-Thulu from Wayward Masquerade, which we will pay for. Here are a few examples of our haikus that we're kind of looking for. So here we go. I have 3 of them. Phil, do you want to read the second one? I'll read the first one.
Sure.
All right. Bag-Thulu eats all. His depths hold all hope and dice. Bag dice in glory.
Yes, that's good. I like that. The Migo are here. Brain casting technophiles.
Casing technophiles.
I'm sorry. Brain casing. I'm sorry. The Migo are here. Brain casing technophiles. They are silly bugs.
Hmm. Azathoth sees us from beyond the gate of doom. Once opened, we end. So we're looking for stuff like that. Stuff like that. If you can get a Bag-Thulu reference in there, more power to you. Or a Wayward Masquerade reference in there. So if you can get some sort of Yellow King reference with Wayward Masquerade, that'll probably be bonus points. Just throwing it out there.
Yes.
These haikus were brought to you by Bag-Thulu and Wayward Masquerade, where you can store all your dice within the endless darkness.
Yes, Bag-Thulu.
All right.
Access granted.
The garage is a little loud today. Sorry about that. Wow, that was louder than I was expecting.
Was that what that was?
Did you hear that, Aloy?
I did.
I think he heard it through my earbud.
Yeah, you weren't supposed to hear that. It's supposed to be a lot quieter than that. My ears are a little bit sore, too.
Wow. Okay.
The garage is malfunctioning?
I think my nose is bleeding now. Like,
oh. Ow.
Oh.
Sorry, everyone.
Ouch. As we recover, lead us in, Chris.
Yeah, we're in the garage. We're designing for kids, for children.
Designing for kids.
Yeah, we don't normally have two interviews in a row because last week we had Rob Bull on the show. But we knew we were doing Kids Week on Misdirected Mark Productions and that Aloy had just finished the PIP system. So here we are talking about the PIP system and designing for children.
Woohoo!
Yep. We wanted to talk game design, but from the perspective of what it is like to design a game for kids. Now, I haven't done that. Phil hasn't done that. But luckily, we have Aloy as our expert here to talk about that. So, Aloy, before we get into the questions, and you've already mentioned a bunch of them, can you once again go through the list of games that you have designed for kids?
Sure. Mermaid Adventures, Infestation, an RPG of Bugs and Heroes, and Camp Myth, the RPG. And obviously, the new PIP system core book is really good for introducing kids to role-playing games.
Yeah. So you have way more cred than us on this. So what we're going to do tonight is I'm going to because we're down Bob, Chris is going to man the chat room for any questions that come in from the chat room. And you and I are going to talk about the idea of designing for kids. I am going to ask you basically as if I was going to learn how to do this.
So like a mentor apprenticeship.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just going to toss some questions at you, and we're going to start from the top with design, and we're going to go through our questions are going to go all the way through publishing. So we're going to try to cover all the areas about making a game. About halfway through, we'll do a little check in with the chat room. So chat room, if you have questions, Chris is ready to queue them up. But Aloy, I'll start with this question. So as a designer, when you look at kid gamers and adult gamers, like what are some of like the main differences you see?
So as a designer, the main things that I notice is that I would say kids are very tactile when it comes to how they pick up rules. Whereas like an adult, you can just say, hey, it's 3, and then it's 4, and then you roll it, and you add 6, and, you know, and they're like, oh, okay, got it. You know, a kid, you can't really throw just numbers out at them, so it becomes very tactile. So it ends up being, even on your sheet, it's like, all right, do you see the shape here? It's a triangle. That means it's a D4. Do you see this square? That means it's a D6. And they can start to pick up and match different things by what they're able to see and handle, and not necessarily, math. when I was designing the PIP system, basically I would say roll this many D6s and then roll this many D6s of a different color and tell me how many 4s, 5s, and 6s you find. So it is all about how you explain rules to kids is what I found out a lot of the time. So if you say, how many successes did you get? They go, what's a success again? So if you just say, how many 4s, 5s, or 6s do you have? They catch on a lot quicker when you explain things fully. And then they'll understand later on that a 4, 5, and a 6, that's a success. Oh, I get it. As opposed to giving them the word and then the definition later, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think tactile is really interesting you say that, because from the times that I have played games with my kids, the there's the 5 minutes of they have to look at all the dice and try rolling all of them, and mm-hmm. there's that moment where it's like, okay, like let's get the dice out of your system for a second. But I also remember that too. I mean, I came into the hobby as a kid. I mean, I came into the hobby at 10 years old, the weird dice was part of the attraction to the, to the game, because they just weren't like anything else.
Yeah.
So,
well, and also kids are into like props, like anything that they can hold that they can actually identify. Like when we would run Mermaid Adventures, whenever I would run the Mermaid Olympics, adventure, like we would have like little medals that they could get at the end of the adventure based on how well they did.
Oh, nice. You know,
stuff like that. Like they get, like they understand the tactileness of it all, like that kids really dig that.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Are there any like ways like that when you look at kids and adults that they're pretty much the same when it comes to, like as gamers?
Well, you know, I think that they're always the same, because even kids from and this is actually something I really like about kids. It, you know, a lot of the time people will think like, oh, playing with kids, they're just going to be crazy and all over the place. But no, like I would say kids as young as 6 and 7, they're able to construct pretty like pretty good plans. And you know, like they might not be as complex as, you know, an adult's, you know, like an adult plan, because they know about schematics and stuff like that. But I've seen a group of kids like pull together and go like, all right, well, there's doing this thing. So maybe we should, you know, what we should do is those traps that happened earlier, we need to double back and make them chase us over to the traps. And then you're going to set off the traps while I make them chase me, you know? And it's just like they can construct plans, and it's something that not a lot of people would think. Like, kids are way smarter than we give them credit for a lot of the time.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, it's funny because I have to now remember, like, I was a kid, like, you know, ducking things in dungeons and stuff like that. And yeah, awesome. All right. So with those differences and similarities in mind, when you set out to create a game where part of your audience or your entire audience is for kids, what are like some of your design goals? Like, what are some of the things that you're like, okay, I have to make sure that I do these things in the game?
For the PIP system, for me, it was really being able to make it so that a kid can be introduced to the game without that much effort. Because, yes, there are those kids who are great at constructing plans, and then there are those kids who are like, oh, I'm done listening to this. So, for instance, with the PIP system, there's an element of narrative character creation to it. So if, you know, the game guide, which is what we call the game master, if they're with the kid, they can say, what kind of character do you want to play? And they'll be like, well, I want to play, you know, let's take, you know, Infestation and an RPG of Bugs and Heroes, for instance. And they'll be like, what kind of insect do you want to play? Like, that's usually the first question. And I've seen a lot of kids usually gravitate towards either mosquitoes or spiders most of the time. So if you give them their choice, mosquitoes and spiders, those are everybody's favorites because they suck blood. That's my theory on why. I don't know if that's why, but that's my theory. So let's say that they do a spider, and they'll say, what kind of spider do you want to play? And they'll be like, ooh, I want to play like a spider who's really sneaky and, you know, convinces people that he's their friend, but then, you know, double crosses them at the end. You know, like, that's enough to make a character out of right there. And, you know, even if you're using the full version of the core book and not the simplified version, that means that you're going to pick the spider archetype. That means that you're going to put a lot of dice in sneak and coerce and, you know, probably with some skill qualities of liar and hiding place. And then you're going to hand that character to the kid. And, you know, it literally took you, you know, 5 or 6 minutes to make a character based on what they just told you, and they're already ready to go. Because one thing that I've noticed is that kids have very short attention spans. So you kind of have to hook them in really quickly.
Yeah. So like no traveler life path character creation or.
No, you know. They'll be like, how many more years do I have to roll for?
Right. Or the Palladium. I don't know if you ever played Palladium. I played a lot of Palladium in the 90s, and that was a system where it was like, oh, we're going to take 4 hours to make characters, and then we'll play next week. Like
that was actually the game I started with. I started with Rifts, which is probably why I love random charts so much.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Which is why the PIP system has random charts in it. Because the last part of character creation, and this is actually something that a lot of kids really love, is I guess that would be another thing that kids really love, randomness. So at the end of character creation, after you have everything, you get a couple of random things that are just added to your character, whether it's an item or it's a funny piece of clothing or, you know, somebody that you know something is added to your character that then kind of switches it up. For Mermaid Adventures, you roll randomly for your hair color, your fin color, you know, what kind of hairstyle do you have? you know, stuff like that. And I had parents who were like, I bought the book for my kids, and they stayed up all night making characters we didn't actually get to play, you know, because they loved the randomness of what their mermaids would end up looking like.
Yeah, I'm finding that I'm actually liking that. Like, I'm coming back around on that same thing, and which we could talk about in the after show. But DCC is doing a lot of that for me. That whole idea of random table and random table stuff is kind of growing back on me.
Well, and an example of how like random choices can actually really influence a character. I'm writing a fantasy adventure for the Pip System core book that'll be available for free to backers, but anybody else will have to pay for it. But I was making up a warrior character, and I rolled randomly. I made the whole character, and then I rolled randomly, and I got a feature of hoofed feet. And I said, oh, well, then I guess instead of a big burly dude, it's going to be a minotaur warrior.
Yeah.
Like, and it just changed the entire concept just because I rolled randomly on one thing that said he has hoofed feet. You know, so it's like it just changed the entire – that's why I love randomness, because it makes you – kind of tackle your character in a way that you weren't already about to do. Like, it makes you kind of think quickly on your feet.
Yeah. I mean, it often pushes you out of your comfort zone, and it also challenges you, like, now incorporate this like weird thing or this random thing, incorporate this thing into your idea. And
exactly.
Like you said, it can have a completely transformative effect.
Yeah. And the cool thing about the Pip System core book is that I have lots of advice on how to do that specifically. Like, it's not, you know, it's not just, I don't throw anybody into the system. The book actually has about 25 pages of guide tips on how to run the game, how to use certain rules to good effect, how to make randomness matter, how to create characters, how to, you know, everything, how to run the game. It just, it breaks down everything. So
it's awesome.
I was really proud of that. And that's actually why the book is only out now, and it wasn't out a long time ago, is because I spent a lot of time on the guide chapter to really make it pop. Cause I wanted people to pick up this book and not only like it for the rules and stuff, but also use it as a really good tool for running this game, but any game.
Yeah. All right, so let me now let me flip it over, and we talked about things that you wanted to have in, so design goals. What are some of the constraints? Like, what are some of the things you can't do or have to do when you're designing for kids?
That's kind of a tough one. You know, the main thing is don't make anything too complicated. Like, for me, I tried my best to not have anything higher than the number 10, you know, depending upon how young you're talking about kids, because teens can handle it. So like, I assume when we're talking kids, we're talking, you know, like 6 to 11.
Yeah, I think that's, I think that's perfectly fair. Yep.
Something like that. So when you're talking about that, like, you don't want to put any complicated crunchy math in there. You want to definitely have, you want to have enough that they can get the feel of what a role-playing game will be. Because you don't want to give them the thought that, you know, all role-playing games are going to be super easy all the time. You want to give them at least a taste of, you know, there is some math involved with the hobby. But, like, staying under the number 10 was actually a big constraint for me. Because some of my other games are like, roll a d20 and add that bonus and add that bonus. Oh, you're rolling with a plus 16. All right, awesome. Now it's 16 plus the 17 you rolled, and now do the math. And that can get a bit much for, you know, little kids.
Oh, absolutely. No, I agree. I think that's actually a really smart constraint, is to stay within like kind of the math level of the kids. And I remember like when I was playing with my son early on when he was younger, like in first grade or something. I avoided like D&D and stuff, and I played Savage Worlds with him because raises were an easy concept for him. Four more,
right.
You know, like, get a 4. What's 4 plus 4? 8. Okay, there we go. Like, it was good. Like, he was able to kind of stay within that, within that idea. All right. Awesome.
That makes sense. And Savage World is I think a pretty good one to introduce new players to as well.
Oh yeah. I love it.
Cause you roll one die based on your skill, and then you roll the wild die, and whichever one's higher, you go with that. And I think that that's like a great, you know, kind of, it's super easy for like a kid to pick that up.
Yeah, and the wild die is that like weird random thing, right? Like even if your cool 10-sided die rolls like a 3, like, oh man, your wild die rolled a 6. Roll it again.
Hold on just a second. I apologize.
Yeah.
Time to fill some time.
Hey, we'll take a break. In theme with Kids Week, Aloy is also managing his kids at the house. So I think he had to step away for a second.
Yeah, here, I'm going to take something from the Extra Dimensional Social Media Depository and put it here so that we can fill some time.
Hey, do
Aloy
it up.
Back. All right. So it is Kids Week on Misdirected Mark Productions. And I just want to give you a rundown of all the shows and what they're kind of doing for Kids Week. So over on Advantaged Insight, Wayne had a chat with Daniel Kwan. He lectures about various topics and then plays D&D with kids in a museum. Like that's his job. He gets paid to do that. So he'll like give a lecture on like knights and then he'll play D&D with kids that are between the ages of like, you know, 8 and 18 for like 6 hours. And he does that every Saturday. He's a pre-doctoral student, so he's got his master's and stuff like that already. He's been volunteering at this place since he was like 15. It's a really great interview. I highly encourage everyone when Advantaged Insight drops this week to go and listen to it. It's a great episode. It looks like Aloy's back.
Yeah, that does sound awesome.
Yeah, I'll catch the rest of it in the social media depository. Absolutely. Of what's going on during Kids Week.
Well, good. So we're gonna do one more question about mechanics. And this is, I think this will pertain directly to Pip, which is, How do you balance making a game that is accessible for kids? So, you know, all the things that we talked about in terms of constraints and goals, but also interesting for adults, because a lot of times, adults are going to be kind of the on ramp for kids getting into the game. And so, right. We need to, you know, there's a thing about keeping the parents engaged as well as they're playing the game alongside their kids.
Now, see, I would say that kind of the interesting thing about when it depends on whether you're trying to get parents who are already role playing into it versus new parents
that's
who are
good point.
Looking for something else to do with their kids.
Yeah.
I've gotten a lot of people to pick up the PIP system and say, you know, well, I'm going to try this out. And I'm because the way that I've also structured the adventures, if you read an adventure, and again, the PIP system quick start is out there. If you read the adventure, not only does it guide you through what happens in the story, but it says, this is what's happening in the story. Now, if you're the guide, read this section, and this is the kind of role that you need to ask for. And if the results are this, this is what happens. And it really kind of guides you through what it takes in order to run a game. Now, that's for parents that aren't necessarily into role playing, but want to try something new for their kids. And that was actually something that I really wanted to do. And again, I made it very tactile and visual. So there's little symbols too. So if you don't want to read the whole thing, you just say, oh, well, this says it's a difficulty to athletics check. So let's roll that. Now, how to get, you know, older gamers into it in order to entertain them alongside their kids. So one of the things that I did is, again, I make the rules very modular. So the core rules are just you pick up two different dice pools based on your numbers and you roll. But there are a lot of extra complications that you can add on top of that that can – well, I already said complications. So I guess it would complicate the roll and make it a little bit more you know, involved. So equipment is a thing. So you can have like, say, well, you have a sword and it gives you an extra die. So you roll it. Or you can say, you know, I have this icy, you know, I have this icy sword that gives me +2. And also if I roll 3 over, then it does this extra thing, you know, so there's, but you don't have to do that part. Like that part is really for, you know, if you really want to use the rules to their extent. But I mean, there's also, and I think this is actually true of almost any game that you would run for a kid. It's just a matter of, you know, not overcomplicating the rules, making it so that it's accessible for them. You know, for instance, like making rolls for like called shots and range penalties and, you know, stuff like that, you know, that kind of stuff is fun if you're like really into the scene and you're really into the story and you like complicated things and you like tackling odds. Kids like to win a lot of the right. time.
Yeah.
So you want to make the role as simple as possible and you kind of want to gear the challenges towards something that they're going to be able to succeed at. Now, most kids are okay with losing as long as they know that they have a, maybe another chance to succeed. But I have had I had one kid at one of my tables when I ran at Denver Comic Con and I was running Camp Myth, and he rolled poorly. And, you know, I described that, you know, they were trying to get cockatrice feathers. They were trying to collect cockatrice feathers. And so he sent his pet phoenix to, you know, I want my pet phoenix to go and burn all of them and burn all their feathers off. And I was just like, okay. So it goes and it burns all the feathers off and they're all in flames and you're able to get one, but you burn up a lot of the ones for the others. And the kid actually started crying at my table. He's like, well, I didn't mean to do that. Aww. I want everybody to get their feathers too. And I'm like, oh, but you didn't even see that there's a whole other couple of cockatrice that didn't get burned too. So it's okay. You can stop, you know? So yeah. I mean, this was at a con, so I didn't know this kid's sensitivity level. But knowing your kids and knowing the level that they're at and knowing, you know, how much math they can handle, how much pressure, how many dramatic situations that they're going to be able to do. I think that's kind of the key there. I would say also that most adults that have the opportunity to play with their kids have a good time because they're playing with their kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, how to make the other adults in the group whose kid that doesn't belong to.
Yeah. Yeah. And
how to make them also have fun. That's where most of everything I just said kind of factors in. But like most parents are there for their kid and are having fun because their kid is having fun.
Not me. I'm like selfish as hell. Like I'm like my kid, like I don't want my kid to be an anchor, right? Like I want to have a good time playing and it'd be like, all right, kid, I want you to play too, but like I'm trying to have my fun here as well. Does that make me awful?
Yeah,
I think that makes me awful.
It makes you
a little awful. Yes.
Yeah.
It makes you a little awful.
I shouldn't have confessed that during kids week.
No, you shouldn't.
Damn it.
Like, I mean,
I said the quiet part loud and the loud part quiet.
I like running games for teenagers.
Yeah.
Strangely enough, I do. Like, it's actually fun.
No, it's fine.
Running games for young kids is a challenge.
Yeah. I'm now old enough that if I go back to Crag and run a game at the college, that it's technically like running for kids because I'm old. Anyway, I liked what you said, Aloy, about the modular mechanics, like the idea that, hey, like when we're little, we can start the game with really simple mechanics. And then, as we gain mastery, because kids are going to gain system mastery through play, mm-hmm. like we can now expand the game and we can start having, you know, some things have more depth to them. And this way they kind of grow into the full game.
Exactly.
Yeah. I like that a lot. I think that's really good. We're gonna switch over to taking some questions from the chat room, and then we're gonna change out from mechanics, and we're gonna talk about setting and publishing.
All right, here we go. Here's some questions from the chat room. What age of kids do you aim to design for, Aloy? Is it different depending on the game that you're tending to design?
Yeah, I would say it's always different based on what I'm designing. What's that?
I was going to ask a different question then. Like, when you designed Mermaid Adventures, what were you aiming for age-wise?
Mermaid Adventures was like 7 to 10.
There you go.
When I was originally going. But I had kids as young as 4 play the game with adult support. And I had teenagers play it and have a fun time. Me and my family play-tested the game. And my daughter was about 7 at the time. But, you know, me and my wife were adults and we both had fun. You know, so, you know, that was kind of the main thing that, you know, it was like, did everybody have fun? Cool. Like, even my son had fun. He has autism. And even he had some fun. And he's not really into a lot of social things. So it was pretty fun. So, yeah, I would say for Mermaid Adventures, it was about 7 to 10, 7 to 11. About the same for Infestation. It was kind of the other side of the coin for Mermaid Adventures. So if you like cute, you know, cute things, then you were in for Mermaid Adventures. If you like gross things, then you were in for, you know, Infestation. And you notice that I say cute and gross, not boy and girl.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because I know lots of girls who are in the bugs, and I know lots of boys who are into mermaids.
Yeah, man, we're living in a new world. We don't have to be gender specific for anything anymore.
Exactly.
Well, I've heard people describe the games like that, and it really gets under my skin. So I'm just noting that.
I think over the years
Camp Myth, when we came out with Camp Myth, I would say that we were we were aiming for a slightly higher age range, maybe 9 to 12, 9 to 13. You know, again, you're mostly aiming towards the lowest common denominator. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if a teen picks up the book, they're going to be able to read it and have fun and get it all. But it's about how low are you making the language, the complexity, and how easy it is to get into it. So, yeah, I'm just making sure that, like, when I say 9 to 12 or 7 to 10, I'm not saying that that's the only people who are going to enjoy it. But that is basically, I'm aiming the books so that if a 8-year-old picked up Mermaid Adventures, they would be able to read it and understand it and be able to play it and possibly run it.
Which is super important, like, to make sure that the language in the book is appropriate for the age that you're designing for, because it's also writing for, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Next question. This is one. This one's more about a game line for you, actually. Are you making AMP Year 4 later this year or next year or ever?
I love it. AMP Year 4 is currently in the works. I'm outlining the timeline for Year 4. I actually have a lot of crazy stuff planned for Year 4. So it is definitely in the works. It will end up being later in the year. The Kickstarter will likely be November-ish for it. So, like, I'm looking for a late Kickstarter this year for an early release in 2018.
Very nice. And last question. How many settings are in the works for Pip System right now?
So for Pip System right now, we just got out Mermaid Adventures. We have the conversion for Infestation. And then we have a kid's guide to monster hunting. So those are going to be the main three that I am personally working on. We also have, I also have another worker who's working on one called Super Sentai. And that's going to be Power Rangers-esque.
Do you know how mad I am that it's not me? You know how angry I am that it's not me working on that game? So mad about that. That's okay. I'm sure whoever's designing it is a very good designer.
I can always hook you up with the guy who's working on it, and maybe he might need some help.
If he does, just hit me. Like, I love that stuff. It's some of my, like, Voltron, Power Rangers, all that stuff. It's, like, right in my wheelhouse.
Yes.
Like
Chris is so Chris is a big Power Rangers nerd.
And Voltron nerd.
Yes. Well,
oh, yeah, totally. I am also currently working on an outline, so it will be a little bit, but I'm working on a game called Killing Earth, which is actually going to be a post-apocalyptic setting for the Pip System. And I'm also in the talks with Andy Hopp, who is the creator of Low Life, about making a Pip version of Low Life. So there's that as well. I also have a few others there's one about time travel, where it's very Bill and Ted-esque. So, you know, you actually have a modern day character, and you might have a cave person, you might have a future person, and that would be kind of the archetypes that you would be going around and doing. So that I'm actually a big fan of that concept. We're also working on one called Wild World, which is going to be, it's very kind of based on the Beasts of Burden comic book. So it's going to be a lot of animals kind of fighting against demons and monsters. So there's a lot in the works, not to mention that the Pip System is fully licensable. There's a whole Pip System licensing page on our website, and all you have to do is go there for the information. And it basically involves you sending me information about the type of game that you would like to use the Pip System for, and showing me some samples of what you have in mind and stuff like that. And if I like it, then I'll say, yeah, you can go ahead and use the Pip System. And there you go. And then you can use it for your own game. I'm currently in the talks with just a couple of people so far who are looking to use the Pip System for their upcoming projects. So I'll know more about that as, you know, I get more information from them. But it is open to anybody who likes what they hear. And if you're a publisher or a game designer and you're looking for a system for your cool setting, the Pip System is available for that.
Sweet. There was one quick question I saw go past, which was really quick. Is Mermaid Adventure suitable for 6-year-olds?
I would say yes.
Okay. That was,
I would say yes. Like I said, it's geared towards like 7 to 11. But I have had kids as young as 4 play it, with a little bit of, adult support.
Awesome. All right. Let's talk about setting and publishing. So, which is cool because we just kind of came off that question about different settings for Pip. So, So let me hit you up with this kind of generic question, which is, when you are designing a setting, for games for kids. So we can even, you can even relate this to mermaids. What are like, what are some of the key parts? Like, what are some of the things that you look to make sure that are in there for kids? Like, you know, in terms of character, location, themes, tone, tropes, things like that.
I would say, honestly, artwork trumps most things when it comes to...
We're going to get to that question in a minute.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, when it comes to designing a book, you know, for... Oh, I guess, yeah, you did say that there's like a whole publishing part.
Yeah, we're going to talk about art in a few questions. I don't want to steal that. I don't want to steal it from you. But
so
yeah,
I will hold off on that. But so basically, you can sell a game with just the artwork to a kid.
Yes.
And that's kind of the thing. Because they get a lot. Again, visually, they're very visual learners. When they're that young. So, but I would say, things that I like to have in settings are things that are very easily digestible, and things that are familiar. For instance, with Mermaid Adventures, there's a King Neptune and Queen Anastasia. So, you know, there's the whole, you know, hierarchy of a kingdom underwater, the Kingdom of Atlantis. These are all things that if they've seen The Little Mermaid or they've watched H2O, or, you know, they're into mermaids, then these things are very familiar to them. So you want to have tropes like that in there. Of course, then I kind of backdoor a thing about how some of the mermaids are, you know, not content with, you know, the hierarchy and the kingdoms and stuff. And they're really trying to have a resistance for democracy, you know, and that's not stuff that the kid is going to pick up on when they're really young. But then they might go back a couple of years later and reread the book and they'll be like, wow, I didn't realize that this actually did have a little bit of depth there.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I mean, I like that. That idea that like you really need some tropes to kind of anchor off of. So having a king and queen, having a kingdom, that's things that kids see a lot in other media. So it becomes.
Exactly. I mean, and for things like, for Infestation, there's not really anything. There aren't talking bug things, a whole lot of them at least. So really I kind of just got to make up whatever I wanted. But I think the main thing though, whenever you have a game that is geared towards kids, you need to have a very easily definable reason for their characters to be together.
Nice.
That is a huge deal for kids because if you give them the idea that they should be adversarial to each other, they will become. Kids are very competitive. And, you know, it's not the one of the good aspects of playing with kids that they do get very competitive. But if you give them a good reason why they should not be that way and they should be cooperative, most kids are like, cool, then let's work together to do this.
That's really interesting. I mean, as you say that, because I can totally see that with my kids. Like, if you just tell them, like, oh, you guys are a team and this is what you do, like, that they would totally do that. But if you even hint to them that they could turn on each other, they totally will turn on each other.
It's like a different problem of, like, with older players. Like, if you don't give them some sort of focus, they'll just go off and do their own thing.
Right.
Instead, if you don't give kids some sort of focus, they'll just go off and try to one-up each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That
happens a lot in Ninja Crusade. Because I start Ninja Crusade by saying your clans once were rivals and now you have to work together, and not everybody is all on board with the whole working together. Some people are like, well, let me see how I can stab everybody else in the back, you know, and it's cool if everybody's down with that, you know, but with kids, you know, if one kid hurts another kid, if one kid's character hurts another kid's character, then it can become very bad at the table. Again, I have had kids cry at my table because, you know.
I can see that. Yeah.
It happens when you're playing with younger kids.
Yep. Absolutely. All right. So, So let's talk about the last couple questions I have. I have three of them. So I'll just give you a preview. We're going to talk about writing, art, and layout as, three separate things, things that I know you know about because, you write your own stuff. I know that you do your own art orders and things like that. And mm-hmm. I know that your Zen is layout. So,
yes.
So, yeah. So let's start off with writing. So when you're actually writing a rule book, especially one that you know that kids may be picking up and reading as in to get into the game. So something maybe like Mermaids. Mm-hmm. What are your what are like the things you need to make sure that you do or don't do when you're writing?
You know, I'm actually a big fan again of, you know, writing to a certain like grade level. I kind of have a rule in my writer's guides, and anybody who's written for me knows this. I have a rule in there that says if it's any word that you need to look up, don't use it in your writing. So that's kind of a general rule for Third Eye Games as a whole. But for any game that is going to be geared towards kids, that's like times 10, you basically need to use the simplest of language in order to really be able to make it speak to the kids, because you don't want the kids to basically read every other word because you're using, you know, college level linguistics.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna ask. So obviously you have that in a writing guide. And I'm assuming your editors also kind of are patrolling for that kind of
exactly
language.
Exactly. Both. Yeah. The editor is like, you know, this is too complicated, so, you know, let's rewrite this to be, you know, not as complicated, because that's basically what ends up happening a lot when you're writing for kids. You also need to make sure that everything is really well explained. And when you reference, you can't, like, a lot of the time you can't just reference a rule. You end up having to basically kind of re-explain stuff as you go along, which I think is it's a lost art form, because a lot of rule books, they like to just kind of throw rules at you and then say, check that page for this.
Oh, I'm totally guilty of that.
You know, but I'm a big fan of examples, and I'm a big fan of reusing rules that I've already explained in future examples so that you see how they might commingle.
Okay. Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. Yeah, I can see that as a real challenge. Like, you can't have a kid flipping, you know, over here, over there, you know, check chapter 12 for gear, and then flip back to this, you know, example on, you know, on challenges or something.
Not exactly. Only does that totally make sense as a way to write rules, it's a thing that maybe more people should do. Like, when your examples come up later in the game, after you've already explained a rule, write the example of that rule with that other rule, so you can see how they go together. Cause it's a thing that happens sometimes. Like, we don't always understand how two rules interact. Like, wow, that's a really good idea.
Yeah. Now that you're saying that, I'm thinking, the thing I need to finish for Hydro Hackers is I need to actually put the official outline for the book together so that I know the actual order of the chapters, so that I can just do what Chris was saying. I can have examples reference previous chapters, because I'll know that, like, yes, you already read that chapter. I can put that in this example.
And that's actually, I mean, I get usually whenever my books are reviewed, I get props on the examples that I give, because I like to give lots of examples. Like, it's because it doesn't make any sense. Like, that's how I learn.
Yeah, so no,
I like to.
I'm with you. I'm totally with you. Yes, I think examples are. I think examples are crucial. And yeah, I think there's a thing where, and I mean, I know I had to leave myself a note to, like, you know, like, you need more examples. Like, there aren't enough examples in this book. So. Yeah, no, I think that's really good. And are you a fan of, like, a single example, or do you, like, you know, for certain things, like, you'll do, like, one or two examples just to kind of show the rule, like, this way versus that way?
Oh, I mean, for, like, in the PIP system core book, we use lots of different examples, and we use not only different examples, but using different skills. Like, for instance, when we're saying, like, how do you determine your pool of white dice? Well, you know, we give a lot of examples of why you might use a resist, why you might use a coordination, why you might use a coerce. And then later on we say, and then you figure out skill qualities and figure out, you know, if they give you any additional dice. And we give you even more examples there. We might give you an armor example and or a weapon example or a skill quality example. So, you know, we kind of let you know that all of these things really are connected in the end, even though, you know, it's just the one simple system that's kind of driving everything.
Nice. All right, good. So I'm gonna let you loose on the art part, because let's talk about art goals and art direction when we're doing a kids game, and included in that representation in art, including representation for kids.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about it. Like, what do you what's your process? What's your philosophy about your art direction for games that involve kids?
I mean, for me, it's you will. Kid games really work well when they're in color, first off. You know, that's, I mean, it seems such a simple rule, but color, like, kids like color. Even when I had the Mermaid Adventures and the Infestation Rules, I had them both available in color and black and white. The kids would be like, ooh, I really love this book. It's in color and I want it. And then the parents would be like, is the black and white one cheaper? And I'd say yes. And they would buy the black and white. You know, so it was never a matter of which one really called to the kid. It was a matter of, you know, cost.
Yeah.
But the color pictures were always good for getting the kids to be interested. You know, for mermaids, I wanted the characters to be very cartoony. I wanted them to be very emblematic of the Little Mermaid and stuff like that. So they had, you know, mermaids and you know, fish folk and eel folk and shark folk, and they all had their own cool looks. I think representation is super important. So we had, you know, dark skinned and light skinned, and, you know, we had different colored people, different types of hair, and, you know, I'm huge into that.
Yeah.
You know, for when we went to Infestation, though, you know, we had the option of doing it really cartoony, or the option that I went with is I wanted something that was anatomically correct, but then sort of cartoony on top of that. So all of the bugs in the book, they are the real, like, structure and skeletal structure of real bugs, but they're doing stuff like, you know, drinking out of martini glasses and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, reading books with a magnifying glass. That's one of my favorite illustrations in Infestation is, I've written that the fleas have gotten to be very academic. So they like to sneak into libraries and read all of the human books and learn about their histories and stuff like that. So anyway.
No, I love those little twists. I love those little twists.
Like, I'm a fan of the fleas too. I like ants and I like fleas personally. In Infestation, but, you know, and for that was more of a gross thing, because if you make them too cartoony, then they're just like anime characters with wings. But I really wanted you to know that these were bugs. So, and I've had, you know, grown people open up the book and be like, ugh, like, that just makes my skin crawl. And I'm like, yes,
yeah,
that's what I wanted. But then kids pick up that book and they're like, ew, gross, I love it.
Right.
You know, so,
yeah.
You know, completely different reaction, but definitely the reaction that I want.
That's awesome. And then I assume, because, you know, you were talking about representation, it's also important to have kids that look like kids in the included artwork.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, you definitely want to have some kids in the artwork, because if you don't have kids, a lot of the time kids will play kid characters. So you want to have some sort of representation that they can be like, I want my character to be like this. I don't think it needs to take over the whole book, like, if that's not really the goal.
Yeah.
But if the goal is for kids to play in this game, then you definitely want to have kids in, and not always, and you want kids doing awesome things. Like, it can't just be, you know, kids in the background while the adults are doing all of the heavy lifting. Like, it needs to be kids doing cool things, like sneaking around or fighting a monster. Like, that's actually going to be a big deal when I do Kids Guide to Monster Hunting after it's done being written, is, you know, it's all about, you know, it's all like, you know, Stranger Things, Monster Squad, Goonies. It's all about where the adults aren't listening, so the kids have to handle it. So it's not about, you know, the adults doing anything. As a matter of fact, it's going to be quite the opposite. The adults in any of the illustrations are going to be clueless, and they're going to be ignoring the problem, whereas the kid is going to be actively working against the forces of darkness and trying to save their clueless parents.
I love that. I love that that trope that's now kind of coming up, because, you know, I was a latecomer to Stranger Things and, like, binged it a couple months ago and, like, absolutely, like, lost my mind. It was so good.
It's an amazing show.
Yeah.
I just rewatched it with my wife because she hadn't seen it before. And it was so, so good.
Yeah. And you know, I love that trope. I love that trope. Like, adults aren't paying attention. It's the same thing with Tales from the Loop. Like, adults aren't paying attention. The only people who actually are in on this are the kids. And it, It's great because then it removes that thing where it's like, oh, the adults are going to come in and kind of trump this whole thing and like, like stomp all over it. Like, exactly. No, they're helpless. Like they're foils and we got to, roll up our sleeves and do this ourselves. All right. So our last question in this segment is taking words and art and let's talk about layout. Okay. So when you're laying out a book, for kids, for gaming for kids. And I know you've done a number of different layouts. What are some of the things you think about in terms of laying out the book?
I think that probably whenever I did Mermaid Adventures and Infestation, the font size was bigger. I made sure that the headers and stuff were very big and bold to really catch the eye. I also did those two games single column as opposed to double column,
mm-hmm.
because it just made it so that when you were done reading that one page, you didn't read one side of it and then the other side of it. I don't know. It seemed like kids liked it much better that way.
You also, am I right? Both of those are like 6x9s, right?
They're 6x9s. So is the new core book is 6x9. But basically, yeah. So I would say single column, big fonts. Even with layout, like if you're going to have color art, you need to have, something striking. You want the blue letters and, orange columns, and you want it to catch their attention and do that sort of thing. So I do a lot of that again in the Pip System core book. Again, that's the latest thing that I've laid out. So it's, probably the best thing I've laid out since, in a long time. So,
well, I think 6x9 is interesting because for kids, especially, it's a good size for them, right? Like it's not daunting. Like, it doesn't look like a textbook.
Oh yeah. The giant, 8.5x11s, hardcover, 350 page book, like kids don't.
It's okay.
That.
You can say the Pathfinder core book. We all know which book you're talking about. It's true. That book is enormous. And I don't know if I would hand my 8-year-old that book and be like, hey, we're going to play a game. Thunk as it lands on the table.
I wish that it was only Pathfinder that I was talking about.
Right.
There's so many games that are just like that. And those games really aren't geared towards kids all that much. Like Pathfinder can be played with kids, but it's not made to be played with kids. And I think that's the biggest difference.
Yeah.
That's the whole family gaming category at the Innies always, it does kind of confuse me because you have games that are for kids and families put up against games that weren't designed with that intent, but I guess you could play with your kids.
Yes.
So it does appear sometimes that the intent should matter when it comes to that sort of thing. So again, like Pathfinder, you can play with kids, but only if you really want to like spend a lot of time explaining stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas with the Pip system, you don't need to do that. You look for fours, fives, and sixes when you roll these dice. Okay, cool. We're ready to play already, like right there. And then we can add more stuff in later as you get more familiar with it.
Do you know I heard the strangest argument for why Pathfinder is a pretty decent game for kids?
Yeah, what's
one word? It teaches kids quick math. So because there's a lot of math in that game.
Sure.
And because there are so many books, if the kids get into it, they read a lot. There's a lot more stuff for them to read. And a lot of it's free online.
I'm not going to argue against some of that stuff because I'm the product of, I'm the product of a 10-year-old sitting with a stack of D&D books. But
yeah.
But I don't necessarily, so I was going to say, and I was saving this for the end, that based on everything that Aloy told us, it is at times a miracle that I, as a 10-year-old, got into this hobby because those original player hand, like the original, first edition AD&D player handbook, DMs, DMG and, Monster Manual, had basically none of the things that Aloy was saying, right? Like they were multi-column with small font and black and white artwork, and they were kind of harshly laid out. Like we've come a long way. Like we've come a long way in designing games, specifically designing games, making them accessible for kids. It was literally a miracle that some of us from the early, like the early 80s and stuff, made it into the hobby. Like everything about the, you know, those books were challenging. I mean, I'll be honest, I never actually read the entire first edition AD&D DM's guide. Like it was,
well, come on, those books were not really well written.
Oh, it was, I mean, for a 10-year-old, it was brutal. I mean, there's the other game that
brutal for people in their 20s.
Yeah, I mean, there's the other game that I never completely got as a kid. I'm trying to think which one it was. There was a couple of them that were like, oh, Villains and Vigilantes. I could never wrap my head around when I was a kid. It was like, it was, there was like formulas and it was tough. Like first edition, second edition, V&V was a bit harder. And then, you know, then TSR released Marvel Superheroes, and then it, you know, suddenly superhero games became super accessible for young kids. So anyway, yeah. I think,
well, I think too, I mean, based on what you're saying, that's why there was always a stigma against people who role played, because it kind of took a special kind of kid to be able to absorb that, and they were called nerds.
Yep. And I was that kid.
So I mean, but that's kind of the thing. So that's why it was attached to that sort of stereotype for such a long time. But nowadays, first off, geek culture and all of that is more widely accepted, and you know, kids are getting into it at a younger age, so you need to make things that are accessible to all kids versus just, you know, the ones that, you know, are super smart already and then are able to absorb these very complicated concepts that would be like in a D&D book. So, I mean, that's kind of the thing. That's the reason why I started making kids' games, because sure, you can stick one of those bigger books in a kid's hand and hope for the best. But if you make a game that is made for them, then it makes it much more likely that they're going to enjoy the hobby and get into the hobby, and then be able to absorb those things because now they have a foundation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I'm, you know, it's great. Like, I think it's great that designers are actually out there working on how to get kids into games, because, you know, I don't think we necessarily have to walk uphill in the snow, you know, both directions kind of thing anymore. Like, I don't think there needs to be a barrier of like, well, you know, you need to be this nerdy to play this game. Right. there was that in the 80s. Like, you know, you had to be like a certain, like, you couldn't even just be nerdy. Like, you had to be a certain flavor of nerd to have achieved role-playing status.
Yeah.
Are we done? Because you can't type and stop talking.
I can do both. But anyway, are there any final questions from the chat room? Because I
do have one. I have one. Aloy, what historical RPGs have influenced, in other words, what RPGs in your history have influenced your design going forward?
I was going to say historical RPGs. I haven't played any of. but I think my, I played a lot of Rifts. That was when I started. So that influenced me. Partially, it gave me a love for random stuff, random rolls. But it also taught me how, I hate to say it, but how not to kind of design a few of the different systems. So I knew kind of where I did not want to go. I played a lot of White Wolf, which I do love White Wolf. I love their themes, and their layout was always really like on point. So I would say that. Strangely enough, I am definitely not a D&D Pathfinder person, so those types of games did not influence me at all. But you know, I would say those. I'm, you know, really into Savage Worlds. I like a lot of like pickup games like Fiasco and Penny for My Thoughts. You know, but mostly though, I would say those would be the kinds that kind of have influenced my, you know, direction. But you know, a lot of it comes, I hate to sound conceited, but a lot of it comes from me. You know, because the way that I design games is I look for, if I want to play something, I look for a game that does that. And if there isn't one, then I make it.
It's got to be getting harder nowadays, right? Because there's so many games
really
out there.
Really not. I have lots of ideas still.
Really? Like,
I have tons of ideas still. Because there's just, I mean, and there might be some parallel development. Maybe there's somebody who's coming up with a game that I'm also coming up with a game for. Who knows? But, you know, I have tons of ideas still because there's still so many different types of experiences that you can have in role-playing that just is – it's not out there right now. And a lot of it is because there is, you know, market superiority when it comes to, you know, there are certain companies that kind of dominate the market. You know, like I remember I was at a con and I was like, hey, you know, we have some openings for some games. I was working the table. I was like, we have some openings for some games. If anybody wants to come in and play some games, you know, we have some open slots and we would love to have you. And they're like, do you have any Pathfinder? And I'm just like, actually, no, but we have this awesome, cool, you know, new fantasy game that you can come and play. And it's got, you know, different mechanics than Pathfinder, but it's going to be just as exciting. They're like, I only play Pathfinder. And then they just walked away. You know, so, you know, and I'm not singling out Pathfinder because that just means that they did a really damn good job. But there is a sort of mentality when it comes to a lot of gamers when they're like, when they find something that they like, then that's the thing. Like, that's the only thing that they're ever going to do ever again. And I've seen this. It's just not me, though. You know, so I'm a little bit of a game whore. Where I like to jump around and play different games.
We call it polygamerous around here.
Yeah, we're polygamerous.
Yeah. That way you don't have to say game whore because that has possibly a negative connotation.
We even have a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Oh, I want one of those t-shirts.
You can pick it up over on the Encoded Designs web store.
Yeah.
Oh.
Polygamerous.
You just order it, they'll ship it right to you.
Can you give me the URL for that?
Yeah, Phil, you want to throw that to him?
I'll shoot him over a link.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, totally. I will totally buy that.
We would love to sell you polygamerous shirts.
Totally. I like polygamers. It's a much better term than game whore, although I'm not offended by game whore, but I can understand how some people
would. I used to call it system promiscuous. Mm-hmm. That was my other that I was system promiscuous. I'll always like tinker with somebody's system, yeah.
Now see, for that makes me seem like you have a core game that you like, but you kind of flirt with other games.
That's possibly true in the past, but I think I've really embraced full polygamers.
Yeah, we're totally polygamers. Yeah. The number of games you've played in the last 6 months would just be very true for that.
Totally.
Cool. Well, that's everything then. Aloy, thank you so much for being our expert on designing games for kids. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It's what I live for. So this is what I do.
Now, do you want to hang out for a little while or do you got to go or what's the deal?
For the after show?
Not for the after show, for the social media depository and then the after show. I mean, if you got to go, we understand.
I do kind of need to go. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. No, that's okay. We actually know you have a kid that still actually needs to go to bed, right?
Well, yeah, I'm going to go see if I can get him to go to bed now.
So why don't you let folks know right before we let you go where they can find you on the internet and where they can pick up your games?
Oh, yeah, totally. You can find my games at thirdeyegames.net. We actually just revamped the whole store and everything earlier this year, so it's an amazing experience for you to go through everything, and everything's available there. You can also go to DriveThruRPG and just type in Third Eye Games. You can find me on Twitter at Third Eye Games, on Facebook at facebook.com/ThirdEyeGames. If you really just type in Third Eye Games anywhere on the internet, you'll probably end up at me.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, once again, Aloy, thank you so much for being on the show. I can't wait to see the new cool things that come along with the PIP system, and you have yourself a pleasant evening.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me on for the fifth time in a row. I'm a member of the Five Timers Club. Yeah,
you're the only member of the Five Timers Club.
Yeah, we have to now actually go. We have to go buy you a jacket. We got to go figure out how to do this.
I mean, I have some money in the bank for that, but I mean.
That's awesome.
Now the jacket might just fit on a miniature Aloy, so I'm just letting you know.
Oh, I'll
wear it on my
hand.
I'll wear it like a glove. It'll be awesome.
We could 3D print an Aloy.
Oh yeah, we could. We could 3D print an Aloy and then put a little jacket on it.
Oh, that's awesome. Ooh. Bob's got a 3D printer, right?
Yeah, he does.
We should make him. All right. Well, all right. That's
all right. I want pictures.
Yeah. we may need pictures. We may need some pictures. So.
Now the real question is we just need to figure out what hairstyle.
Yeah. I mean,
oh, no.
That's tough. I mean, I was voting before I told Aloy, because I was talking to him the other night, like, he did braids. I was like, oh, they're fantastic. I love it. Like, but there's so many, like, that's the thing at Gen Con. Can I just say that real quick? You have to go to Gen Con every year and go to Aloy's booth. Cause you have to, like, which Aloy hairstyle are you going to get?
It's true.
I don't give it away, Aloy. Don't give away which one it is for Gen Con. I'll wait for the pictures to come in.
I won't give it away.
Yeah.
Right. Well, take it easy and have fun.
Thanks, Aloy.
Thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, that was fun.
That was fun.
That was fun. I always like having Aloy on.
We are running a little long, so I'm just going to, instead of going to the social media depository, I'm just going to do this real quick thing about the rest of Kids Week.
Yeah, go ahead.
And then we'll talk about H2O and gear in the after show. So
sounds good.
If you want to hear Phil and me talk about Hydro Hacker Operatives, you maybe should be a patron. $1 a month, you get that, the whole after show thing. So there you go. So the rest of Kids Week, I talked about ATI, that's Daniel Kwan. CypherSpeak, they chatted about No Thank You Evil.
Of course, so that's such a great fit.
Uh-huh. Pandas Talking Games, you and Senda talked about one-shots and campaigns for kids.
Yeah.
Anything, do you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
What we talked about a lot, I mean, what we really talked about were the traits that, the good and the bad traits that embody kids.
Mm-hmm.
Because both Senda and I are parents, and so there's a little bit of a no holds bar, like, these are not wonderful special little angel snowflakes that you're sitting down to your table with. So, you know, we talked about the challenges of how to run a campaign and how to run one shots, accounting for the really awesome things that are about having kids at a table and some of the challenging things, like Aloy touched on, like attention span.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like, how do you, you know, you're not running 8 hours of gaming for, mm-hmm. you know, a 6-year-old.
Yeah, strange enough, a lot of the kids show topics, they all kind of go along the same lines.
Well, I think
cool
some...
because it's so many of us had so many different perspectives on the thing.
Yep.
Hobbs and Friends of the OSR, Brett from Gaming MBS was on there.
Brett games with his kids all the time.
Mm-hmm, yeah. He does. And then Corey Gashman, and that'll be out on Thursday. Also, the Gnomecast will be out on Thursday, and that was John, Ange, JT, and Matt talking about their experiences gaming with kids and their experiences as, I think, as younger folks gaming too.
That's awesome.
So there's that. And then on Down with D&D, which came out already, Sean and Rory.
Oh, come on. Yep. Rory was on the
Rory
show?
Rory was the co-host.
Oh,
yes.
That's so awesome. Yep.
So we talked about D&D with kids and teens because just really very, very, very recently, Sean ran a game for Rory and three of her friends who were interested in playing D&D. And he's just going to run them through like one encounter, and they ended up wanting to play, and they ended up playing for like 2 or 3 hours.
Oh, that's so fantastic. Yeah. It's great. I mean, I'm excited because, you know, we know Rory.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, you know, we've known Rory for years now, mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. it's actually pretty awesome.
And she's been gaming since she was 11.
Yeah.
And she's been hanging around it since before that, so it was interesting to get her perspective. There's a very, very interesting question that I asked that I think everybody should tune in to check out, which was like, Sean Frames thinks about the game in his head like a novel. I think about the game in my head like a...
TV
like,
show?
Like a TV show or yep. a movie. Or a comic book a lot of times, like the panels and things yep. like that, storyboarding. Rory doesn't think of it that way, but I'm not going to tell you. I'll have to go listen to find out how she thinks about it.
That's excellent.
All right. Well, that's our Kids Week lineup, but we're going to get out of here now. So before we leave, we'll do a few Patreon shout-outs. So GM Gerrymander, who's in the chat room, thank you so much for being one of our patrons. Oh, so it was Eric Bontz. He's in the chat
room. Also in the chat room, yep.
Sean Gilgore was in the chat room earlier. I don't think he is now. Thank you also for being a patron, Eric Jeppesen and Wayne the Palladian Chan, who's the host of ATI and Bonestone Obsidian. Thank you so much for being a patron.
Absolutely.
Is there anything in the chat room? Because I'm looking at the show notes.
And they're pretty active in there. There was a whole thread about a bunch of us talking about all the Palladium games we played in the 80s mm-hmm. and 90s. Yeah.
Well, we can continue that conversation in the after.
Yeah, let's do it.
Everyone, thank you so much for listening.
If you are free Tuesday evenings at 8:45 at 8:45 p.m. Eastern, 6:45 p.m. the Queen's time. You're welcome. Come join us live on Twitch, where you can chat with the other listeners in the ever awesome chat room for life.
They are very awesome. It was fun to be in there tonight.
Yeah, and ask us questions, which they did. Thank you for not embarrassing us by just chatting amongst yourselves and engaging the guest. Thank you.
Yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed it. If you cannot make it to that live show, check out our podcast each week wherever you get your podcast. Or if you were late to the live show or had to leave in the middle, just, you know, pick up the podcast and see what you missed. Also, you can take a listen to some of the other shows in the Misdirected Mark Network, which I just mentioned most of them and what they were doing on Kids Week. So I'm not going to, you know, go over it again. But you can and should also listen to some of our other brother and sister podcasts. There's She's a Super Geek, The Knights of the Night, and the Always Amazing Gaming and BS.
Yes. Somehow it seemed shorter.
Because I cut everything out of the middle of it.
Yeah, that's...
Because I already talked about all the shows.
Yeah, that's fine. After you have listened to us, and before you have to put your kids to bed, leave us some feedback. You can reach us directly at chris@misdirectedmark.com. That's him. phil@misdirectedmark.com. That's me.
Uh-huh.
We're like really, like without Bob, like we're screwing up this ending left and right. Or...
Bob at Misdirected Mark. Well, you know what? Everybody send Bob at MisdirectedMark.com your get well wishes. Yes, and hopefully absolutely. He won't be dead next week.
Bob at MisdirectedMark.com. He will yes. appreciate it. Will
check
appreciate
out our it. Facebook group. Hit us up on Twitter at MisdirectedMark, mm-hmm. at DNA Phil. Again, send your well wishes to at Robert M. Everson.
Uh-huh.
And chat room, do that right now. Start tweeting Bob and hoping, telling me, hope he feels better. And at the Light 101.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And of course, always go to the homeroom of our social media, RG Plus community.
Mm. If you really are enjoying what we're doing here on Misdirected Mark, you can support our Patreon campaign at patreon.com/MMP. You'll get access to the after show, which is coming up very shortly, pre-production show notes, musical parodies, Panda's Talking Game bonus outtakes, D&D offerings when we can put them out, and whatever other special releases we come up with, like Senda opening up a bottle of Orangiana and actually determining what's in it after it's been expired for like 5, 6, or 7 years.
God, I'm not sure I'm down with this one.
She suggested it to me earlier, yeah, so
it's a bad idea.
I agree. Well, this has been a Misdirected Mark production, the media arm of Encoded Designs. Mike, drop.
We out.